Well, let me say that I have to leave in about 15 minutes, and I would like to actually speak to an idea I have about where we might go. It's been in writing. I put it in. I mean, it's been out there. I sent it to the DNB a year and a half ago, and there was actually a motion 2 years ago which basically supported it. But I would like the opportunity.
George, before you do that, I have Janice on, and then we'd like to hear your ideas, George. So,
okay.
Janice, go ahead. Go ahead, Janice.
Thank you. I'll be really brief. My experience with strategic planning suggests that George's idea is very sound. However, I would also suggest that we make sure that we're inclusive of other strategic efforts that are tantamount to the better health of the organization. And I'm in favor of moving ahead initially with a perspective that gets us started. I would also, however, recommend that there might be the need for a subcommittee to put together some of the other critical elements so that our energy in terms of not only having an appropriate person lead us through the process, but that person best uses their services by getting as much of the initial plans for a 3-year looking forward to PMB as possible. So I understand the immediate focus that George is presenting. However, I would be willing to work towards something that coordinates one or two other very key elements in strategic planning for there to be a really organic and useful process. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for that, Janice. So, George, why don't you give us your ideas, as you expressed earlier. Go ahead.
So, I mean, it begins with where do we look for a new audience?
Janet Kay, I have a point of information.
Yes.
So is this basically combining two agenda items? One is begin the process for a 5-year strategic plan, and the other is explore opportunities for increasing.
It's actually not. Although I mean, it's clear that they're somewhat related, of course. So, but we're just going to hear from George, and then we will move on to the next. Unfortunately, George needs to leave in a moment. So, go ahead, George.
So, and I have no problem with putting in other aspects of strategic planning, but I think the critical problem for us is we need more listenership. Otherwise, we're not going to have any finances to manage. So where do they come from? My thought was they come from people who are already in motion and they're responding to the critical crisis that we're. We have a serious problem in this country and in this world, and it's we have a decaying social world system, and people are in movement around it already in rather large numbers, but they don't get to communicate to each other very much. Some, but you know, we can facilitate that. So my thought was that we make an effort to reach out to organizations which are already active about doing something about creating a viable future. And we offer them a national platform for their events, whatever, and those could be various kinds of things. I mean, it could be just a speech, for instance, by the President of the United Steelworkers, on foreign trade and the economy, and play it throughout the country. I believe they have about 1 million members. If we were to make that a national event, they would notify their 1 million members that such and such was going to be on. We would tell them where they could hear it. If we have 170 affiliates, moving on to 200, so we would, you know, let people know where you can hear it. And of course, everybody can hear it on the web. Another example.
90 seconds.
Didn't realize I had 90 seconds for this.
Go ahead, George.
The idea is to use the networks for people that we're putting on the air as special events. And you can also do it locally at every station. Now, for whenever I put anybody on the air, I make sure that their networks are alerted that these people are going on the air and their issues are going to be discussed as a way of building audience. We can do it with regular shows, with guests locally. We can do it with national issues by making a national event. But giving people a national platform is really something that aids them in what they want to do. It's something which I think they'll really want to have happen. I've already spoken to the Sierra Club and 350.org. Clearly, climate change is one of the kinds of issues we're talking about. And they were both very interested in that. I spoke to their media people. I haven't gotten back to them because we've never done anything about this. It was actually a motion passed 2.5 years ago that we should be doing this, but no ED has ever picked it up and actually done it and put it in place. So anyway, that's the idea, that reaching out to groups of people who already have a constituency, making use of their networks to reach people we would never reach by our signal. And believe me, I mean, there are large numbers of progressive people who do not know about Pacifica. I was amazed during the occupation to find out how many people have never heard of it here in Houston. So anyway, that's the idea, that we can use that as a way of reaching out to people who are likely to want our services, being of use to them. At the same time, they give us access to a new audience.
All right. Thank you, George. We have about 3 minutes left on this item, so I'd like to hear from folks how we move forward on this, what we should do. Manajay, go ahead.
Yes, actually, I wanted to echo what George said, because actually I have a hands-on experience. Last year, for example, we tried to get basically Food and Water Watch, which has a large community and supporters, to not only help us to get $25,000 donation to their ward. They had a donator who's going to give them $25,000. And then they said, okay, what we can do for you is that to tell our membership, meaning to their own a huge list that they have, to tell their people, if you give, for example, $100,000, $100 or $50 or whatever, to give to WBAI up to $25,000, it would be matched for Food and Water Watch. And through logistics and legal issues, we never get it done. This was an incredible, not only we get to introduce BAI to a large group of people around the country that they don't know anything about BAI, but also we will raise funds. And actually, I'm very embarrassed to talk to these people again about this. But, you know, if we have a very consolidated effort and set in, what George says is very doable. Very, very doable.
All right, thank you so much.
Janet Kay. At the same time.
Yes, Janet Kay, go ahead.
Okay, yes. So, George, this is, it sounds like this is a programming approach to reaching out. I wanted to remind everybody about the net neutrality issues that we're dealing with these days. And George, you were saying that these could be streamed on the internet. Well, one of the things that maybe we should start with having something about net neutrality so that we can save and keep it. And then there are other solutions or other approaches to broadening membership. Andrea Pritchett from KPFA presented a proposal about Pacifica membership, and that's kind of been discussed a little bit. There are other ways to do this, to raise money also.
Thank you, Janet. George, before you have to leave, do you want to give a recommendation what you think we should do at this point? What do you think? What's your recommendation?
I think we should plan on doing a national special event. You know, there are any number of issues to do it on, and certainly net neutrality is one that would be useful to do. Mm-hmm. And as soon as the judgment is made by the courts, so we know who's actually in charge, we plan on doing that and pick one and do it and get the experience of doing it and do it as soon as possible. That's my feeling.
Okay, so are you going to offer any other motion to the board? I mean, perhaps not now, but are you going to write up something to send around, or are you?
You mean about that suggestion?
Yeah, exactly. Could you do that?
Well, you know, I have, and I will again.
Okay.
I mean, I wrote it up some time ago, just a little while ago. I said, we ought to do this with this global climate convergence, which is happening right now. This is
exactly.
a lot of
people exactly.
in motion.
And
we're doing nothing, you know. I mean, I'm going to do something on my show, but, and I've been doing things on my show, but we could have made this a national thing as well, and they would have been delighted. I mean, you know, I spoke to the people involved in that. Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate for president last time, she would have been delighted to have Pacifica, you know, for 2 hours or 1 hour, you know, at all the stations at a certain time, live throughout the country. This is going to be the issue we're going to talk about. We could have done it if we really had, you know, management in place to make it happen. But as soon as we can, I think that's exactly what we want to do. We want to pick some issue.
Thank you, George, so much. We're going to move on to the next item on the agenda, but I wanted to say, George, that your idea, actually, of making this a national program, and I know that I've had discussion with Summer about this as well, you know, demonstrates the importance and strength actually of the progressive network that we have with Pacifica, and of course all of the affiliate stations as well. So it is a wonderful opportunity for, certainly for Pacifica, but for the country as well. I think you're inferring that. So thank you for your suggestion. I appreciate it. We're going to move on to the next item.
And I'm going to have to leave.
Thank you, George.
Any other thoughts about that, I'd be glad to hear over internet or give me a call.
All right. Thank you so much. Thank you.
This is Jenna Kay. I thought I heard somebody join the call.
Yes. Did somebody else join the call? I was listening. We have, I think, how many people? Oh?
Hi, this is Kim. I'm on. I just put myself on mute.
Kim.
Sorry, I'm late.
Thank you so much. No problem. Thank you. So the next item on the agenda, as Janet Kay was saying, that's related actually to this issue, is exploring opportunities to increase Pacifica's membership and donations. And I have some of these from Janet Lane Yort on that item for discussion. So, Summer, I was wondering if you could chime in here and offer some of your ideas or whatever you'd like to say along this line.
I'm sorry, are we still on strategic planning with George?
Well, it's sort of strategic planning, but it's exploring opportunities for increasing Pacifica's membership and donations. So, yeah,
sure.
That is actually strategic planning.
I agree with George in terms of, you know, working with other organizations who have natural constituencies which are, you know, in line with our mission, because they will probably encourage their own members to listen to the station and to be involved. I think at a much deeper and fundamental level.
Hold on just a minute, Summer. I'm sorry. I'm going to ask for people to please mute your phone if you're not speaking. I know there's some other going on here. So thank you. Go ahead, Summer.
Thank you. Yes, I mean, I think we have to explore a number of creative options, but one of the most important things that I've observed in this position is that most of our radio stations have a closed shop mentality in that there is no movement to the grids, and people, we were constantly saying we need new listeners, but part of that involves having new programming and having a creative environment in which that programming can bubble to the surface. And I feel that over the course of many years, what has happened is we don't have a systemic system of program evaluation which is objective and dispassionate and that everyone can see is fair. And the expectation of movement on the grid, where people are not taken aback by the idea that their program might be moved, canceled, or otherwise in some way adjusted, and so that there's a feeling or sense of entitlement in programming that people not only expect to have their show on the air for 30 or 40 years, but to never have it even moved within the scheduling grid. And I think we need to change that whole dynamic. We come from a community radio basis and, you know, started out life as a volunteer-driven organization. And over the years, that has somewhat changed. And what I think one of the things that we have to do to completely revitalize the organization is to open up that grid, make regular programming slots for new programming, give people the opportunities to submit ideas for, you know, a 4-program series over a course of a month or a 12-program series over 3 months. Essentially, to be able to say, yes, this is something I envision that I think would be great on our airwaves, and this is what I'd like to do. And then provide the support and resources to be able to nurture those volunteer programmers to produce those things. We have an educational mission, and I think that we need to return to that and see to it that what our mission in the community is to allow those new voices to be heard on the air. And I think if we were to do that, and that includes community engagement with organizations the way George is talking about, it includes engaging with things like the journalism departments of universities and inviting these people whose life career path is, you know, they want to be in journalism, to give them opportunities to come and explore that at our stations. And I believe that if we do that and become a place where people feel they can be heard on the air, that that will invariably draw new communities of interest as listeners. And I believe that's the direction the organization needs to go in, because I feel in the larger community we are seen as largely stultified in some ways and stagnant. And you can't get new listeners by just saying, well, we just need to find new people to listen to the same stuff we're putting on the air all the time. We need to have that creative interchange of ideas with the community so that people know, hey, I've got this brilliant idea. Let me go to the station and I can do something with this. Or I really want to work in community radio. Let me go volunteer on someone's show. And there are some very concrete steps we can take to pursue that. But I think that's what we need to do, is we need to become engaged with the community in a way that is a two-way street. So the programming gets on the air, and we engage those communities of interest that may be interested in new programming. And obviously, you need to let people know this is happening. So marketing, promotions, all those things they're no-brainers that every organization needs to do, and which Pacifica needs to engage in a much more coherent basis. But I do believe it is about making the programming time available all the time in an open process that people can clearly and transparently see, and that will cause a rebirth within the organization of creativity and engagement.
All right, so thank you so much, Summer. So we have Janice, did you want to add something to that? or your own creative ideas, of course. Is she still on, Janice? I know she was going to have to leave as well.
I'm sorry. I said that I was mute while I'm driving, so I heard the explanation, and I don't have anything to add. But I will just say in the next couple minutes, if anything comes up to which I have expertise, please know that I've already volunteered.
All right, Janice.
Can you hear me?
Yes, Lizette. You want to comment, please. Go ahead.
I'm very wary with what I just heard a few minutes ago, because in practice that's not what happens. And at some point we have to decide whether we're looking for new members with money or new members without money. Mm-hmm. I think in the last month or so, well, last 2 years, the focus has been on money making. And at PFW in particular, we had a slot, a Saturday slot, that was the best in the network, the best. The listeners were there, and they were contributing. And for some reason, and we understand this came from the national office, our previous general manager yanked the heart out of that thing. And that's what caused the problem, especially the Saturday program. So I'm not entirely talking, I will not support anything that is all new to the extent that it's going to yank the heart out of our radio station. That I'm not going to do that. And especially if we do it without some objective evaluation. Until you do that, leave the thing alone. Consult with the local programmers. And not affect change or force change on these stations from atop. So I will be resisting anything that doesn't look objective to me. And we need to decide whether we want new listenership with money, and that's the number one criteria, or whether it's just about educating people. I'm done.
Thank you, Lizette. It seems to me, I'm just going to offer this suggestion to the group, and really this is just for discussion because we've not been able to do this really at the national level, have this open discussion about these issues. But it seems to me that it might be good for us to have a national initiative with people, representatives from all the various stations, to have some discussion about this. Some board members certainly, but perhaps, you know, other folks in the stations as well, program directors or whatever. Wanting to jump in there.
Yeah, Heather, this is Summer. I just wanted to respond to Lizette's concerns because I hear
her. Yeah, go ahead.
And Lizette, that's why, at least for the part that I was speaking of, I prefaced it by saying having a regular system-wide approach to program evaluation. I agree. I think that is the first place you have to start. But I also think that if it becomes a regular part of the cultural environment of the institution, then it will be transparent and everyone will know what goes into it. And it won't be on a case-by-case basis of, oh, why did this show get canceled or why was that put on the air? Because everyone will go through the same process. And it's not about replacing all the old programming with new programming, but I think as an institution, as a radio network, if there are no opportunities provided in the programming grid for new programs to ever get on the air so that people are continuously frustrated in their desires to participate in a community radio station by saying, you know, I've been submitting ideas for 5-6 years and there's no way to get something put on the air. That's what I'm talking about. I feel that one can create a regular places in the grid where you try out new programming, where there are those opportunities to say, ah, and this is what we're putting on the air that have come in as programming ideas this year, and set that up as a process. And if everything is done on a process basis across the network, then it isn't left to the idiosyncrasies of personalities of whether this person is liked or disliked and that's why their program was put on the air or canceled. Because what has happened institutionally is there is no process. You can't figure out why shows are canceled or put on the air or why one show becomes a paid program versus another, because frequently it's left down to the decision, say, of one PD as to whether someone collects a salary for doing a show as opposed to all of the people that volunteer. And what I'm suggesting is that to be a vibrant organization, when you're primarily community-based, volunteer-driven, and educational in nature, is that you have to set up a regular system by which you put things on the air all the time and give that constant dynamism. Because we lack a dynamism, which is one of the reasons we're not bringing in new listeners, is because they don't necessarily feel a sense of ownership of the station if everything stays the same for years on end institutionally. It isn't about clearing away popular programs from the grid, but it is about creating space in the real estate for new ideas to have some place to blossom. And that's what I'm advocating. I think it should be fair. I think it should be applied equally at all stations so that it's not a different process at every station. But most stations, and including most community stations, have some system of evaluation that occurs regularly and some movement to their grids. And I think that has to be part of any discussion in terms of increasing listenership, because if we don't do those things, it's unlikely to occur.
Let me just...
Janet Kay.
Yes, Richard and then Janet Kay. Go ahead, Richard.
I was just going to say that in Houston, we have a morning slot, I think it's only 30 minutes long, that people can bring in, produce shows or produce them there live, and it gives them a chance to, A, try out their stuff, and B, it gives the listeners a chance to hear what they're suggesting how it can evolve. I would like to see that be available at different times of day in Houston too, in the afternoons and evenings, so that different audiences could hear. And I totally agree with Lucette in that it's got to be among all of us. You know, it can't just be coming from one direction. It's got to be a consensus on things. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. Janet Kay and then Carolyn.
Yes, so we have another signal besides KPFA. We have KPFB, which basically it's a much smaller range, and
it broadcasts basically the same thing that KPFA broadcasts, but then there's also Berkeley City Council, I think, that gets broadcast on that, and a couple of other different things. And we've talked here, some of us have talked here about using that as like a test bed for new programs. And so I hope that will happen at some point soon. And I know Richard Karotsky had been talking about doing this. I'll stop.
All right. Thanks so much, Janet. Carolyn.
Yes, thank you. I think, didn't KPFA, or does it still have an hour slot on Sunday night reserved for new programming? It seems to me that every station should have that, a space where people know that they can try out after it's vetted. You know, program director or some whoever says, yes, this program is worth 30 minutes or an hour. And then that person can advertise to wherever they come from, the school or the group or the band or whatever. And that is one way of bringing in new listeners. But then surveil listeners who do listen and ask them for their opinion, get some feedback as a way of just bringing the listeners back to what they were, which is members who really had something to say about what went on the air. So I think that might be a good place to start, is making space on every station's airtime for new programming, one way or the other. And I think that would be nice.
All right, Carolyn, thanks. I'm not sure exactly where to go with this. It's really just a discussion and a lot of really good ideas from people. So if anybody would like to make a recommendation, that would be appreciated. And then I'd like to move on to the discussion about WBAI. Is there any recommendation of what we should do at this point on some of these ideas? They probably should be written up, right? Anything else? I'm going to recommend also, we are streaming, so if people listening on the stream have some ideas as well, please share them with us. We'd appreciate that. With your board members from your various stations or the general managers in your stations or whatever, we'd like to hear from you as well. So is there anything else that anyone would like to say about this? If not, I'd like to move on to the discussion about WBAI. Our time is going quickly here this evening, or this afternoon, I should say. We were going to have a discussion about WBAI planning, actually, with the three board members from WBAI. One of them is not on the call today. We do have two WBAI board members. But this is really a discussion for everyone on the call today, all the board members on the call. But Summer, I was wondering if you would like to start out with some of this as well, some of this discussion about WBAI, whatever you think is appropriate to say at this point.
Sure. I think clearly we are in a really precarious situation with WBAI right now in terms of being 2 months behind in the tower rent, and the crises of the last 6 weeks certainly haven't helped any. Depending on what happens during the May fund drive, which is starting shortly, we'll see what our real position is there. But I do believe that I've been looking into, and I've spoken with council about what other Plan B or C options may be available if WBAI is not able to get back on some sort of sound footing very shortly here, so that we are not in danger of losing the license. There are any number of possibilities available. I think that with the crisis that's been going on with the board, the ability of the foundation's, organizational structure that governance's ability to truly weigh in on sensible and well thought out business plans right at the moment is a bit compromised. But there are some things that we can do. Getting obviously through any of these LMA discussions, I don't believe any of that is moving forward at this time. And I think obviously there's still tremendous antipathy towards those type of ideas at the local level. And in fact, some of them could lead to much more disastrous consequences. WBI doesn't have its payroll this week and doesn't have its tower rent, and it's going to have to dig out of $250,000 hole at the beginning of the fund drive, and that's one of the biggest challenges for the station is it isn't and has not been able to get far enough ahead of debt that accrues between the prior fund drive and the next fund drive so that by the time it gets into a fund drive, it's already behind the eight ball, as it were, and has to have you know, a bunch of money raised in order to become current, and by then they're well through their fund drive without having built up the money that they will need to get them to the next fund drive. And I haven't seen that dynamic changing yet, although we have brought down operating expenses, you know, as everyone knows, by over $1 million in 1 year, it still hasn't been sufficient to close the gap between what's, you know, coming in the way of revenue and what's going out in terms of expenses. One of the options that may end up becoming a necessity to avoid the loss of the license and would preserve the license is something such as a main studio waiver. And these have been brought up in the distant past, but I don't believe anyone has really discussed them recently. I've talked with legal counsel about them at various points. And a main studio waiver, and this would be only a temporary solution, again, while actually addressing, you know, how do we expand, how do we get back to a place where we have sufficient listener support in that signal area, particularly to support its high operating costs. But a main studio waiver would allow us to basically shut down the rest of operations there except for the tower and utilize one of our other facilities, such as Los Angeles, to broadcast directly back to the tower. And that would eliminate all personnel expenses, all studio expenses. It would essentially cut operating expenses by half again, to where all that had to be raised was tower rent. One can still mix in a New York programmatic day based on volunteer programming, as so long as there's access to studio facilities for pre-records in New York, because people could record their shows, upload them, and they could be mixed into a broadcast day that broadcasts to the New York tower that still sounds like WBAI and sounds like a New York broadcast day, and that's perfectly permissible legally. And it would mean that for whatever period of time that this exigent situation continued, we would only have to raise the $50,000 per month for tower rent. So that could probably be done in three fund drives per year, even doing this remote studio broadcasting. That is a drastic measure, but it's not nearly as drastic as losing the license or losing the tower, which is what I feel we may be confronted with here very shortly. Doing a main studio waiver of that nature would not impact on license renewal. I've talked with John Kriegler extensively about this. The FCC would consider our extreme financial duress as a reasonable reason to apply for that main studio waiver, and it would allow us to eliminate another $50,000 to $60,000 a month in operating costs for the station. I don't advocate for this over the long haul because the true desire is to always have your local stations be truly local and accessible to the local community. That being said, however, the mission of Pacifica is to disseminate all of these viewpoints to allow this forum for which, you know, people can express their ideas. And one has to ask the question, is it more important to signal that reaches New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, a tri-state area, and put on mission-centric programming, including locally produced programming? Is that a higher ideal than, say, a complete downgrade of the signal to where it becomes essentially a borough signal that reaches part of New York and none of the other states? These are organizational questions that have to be grappled with, because the ability to bootstrap that station just back up to viability without any sort of either relief in operating expenses or massive transfusion of income is not, it's just not organizationally viable. One can look at it. You either have to bring down the costs for a while you work on things, or you have to have more money coming in while you work on things. And so far, it has been very difficult to get enough additional funding to come into the station to bring us past this point of barely making it from fund drive to fund drive. And being in a position where the tower rent is 2 months behind again, obviously that's where we found ourselves last year, and we very shortly thereafter ended up in court. So I want to see to it that we don't lose our assets while going through these critical crises. And I think if it comes down to it, a main studio waiver takes between 2 and 3 weeks to get approval. after May 6th, you know, I hope to see where we're at in terms of the money that's coming in and whether we can become current quickly enough, or do we need to consider other options like this? Because every option that we take has, you know, positive and negative consequences, but there's a tendency not to grapple with these things while you still have time to make a decision, and we no longer have time. We have to make decisions, or they will be made for us by the financial exigencies that we are facing. And I would much prefer to take a drastic decision that preserves the asset, that continues to allow us to broadcast to three states while we address the other issues. And I'd want to see that that didn't continue for longer than, you know, 6 months to a year. But one has to create that base of support in New York, again, that is strong enough to fund the station and has enough listeners and is relevant to enough of the communities in New York to bring in the funding necessary to have an operational station there on a regular basis that isn't in a position where we are right now, where if the California stations didn't have the money, we would be up against labor grievances next week for failure to make payroll at the two East Coast stations. So I think that is one of the things that I would put on the table as consideration if the financial circumstances continue to dictate that in a couple of weeks.
Thank you, Summer. I'd like for the board members from New York to have a chance to have their say about the situation as well, if you'd like, and that would be Carolyn Burden or Manashe Saba. Would either of you like to make a comment?
Manashe?
Yes, Manashe.
One of the things, I just had to ask a summary question and have comments about what is being done and what people are doing and not doing at BAI. Summer, we were told at the last Finance Committee meeting, BAI Finance Committee, and also at the LSP meeting, that BAI has been catching up and financially, but because we have had severance, and now we have paid it, we would be able to move ahead. Can you talk a little bit about that as much as you know, and you can talk about it as to where we are? Because there are some efforts is going on, as you know, by CAB and other people. But I just want to know first to see what is our situation. What do you see? It seems to me it's much more grim than I have heard before about from the BAI and from the Finance Committee. And what do you see our situation financially at this point in terms of our past dues, you know, severance and all that, that we also, BAI has paid it itself, and that has been, you know, pulling it back from achieving its goal. Thanks.
Sure, Manage. Obviously, meeting the severance obligation of the employees was, you know, was tremendously important and a moral as well as a legal obligation. Because we have finally met that obligation, of course, things such as our health care benefits, which we had continued during the time that we could not pay the severance, those have been reduced dramatically. Again, the real issue is not being able to get far enough ahead and being actually every fund drive that we come into, we've got this huge debt load coming into the drive. And so the first 2 or 3 weeks of drive are just to bring the station current. And it's impossible to keep these fund drives going on for as long as they're going on. The current situation is, you know, the telephones at WBAI were disconnected this week for lack of payment. They had to borrow money for the last payroll period because they didn't have it. They don't have their payroll at all this coming week. They don't have their health care benefits, and neither does WPFW. It neither has health care benefits nor payroll. The tower is already 2 months behind, and we're entering May. So shortly it'll be 3 months, which are due. So what I have in front of me, and then you have premiums that haven't been fulfilled and paid for yet from prior drives. So you'll be going into a fund drive with still a backlog of premiums. I've been personally dealing with the acquisition of flash drives for just one show to fulfill their premiums from October. And we're October of last year. So we've already done how many drives since then? Three? And we're entering a fourth, and those premiums haven't been fulfilled yet. So I'm looking at $256,000 that the station is in arrears on its bills, and that doesn't even include, like, the phone bill that just got turned off. So I'm not seeing, like, every single dollar that's already outstanding at the station. But I see that you're going into a new fund drive with $250,000 deficit, which by the time the drive starts will be $300,000 because you'll have another month of tower rent. And and still unfulfilled premium issues going on because of the inability to necessarily pay those vendors what's required in order to fulfill the premiums. I've received vendor complaints regarding premiums already from the past drives. So what I see is a continuation of this really dire situation financially for the station. And so without, again, and, you know, and of course we have our debt burdens, as we're very well aware of, Democracy Now!, legal bills, other things, you know, and because of the large amount of debt on the organization's books overall, it is not possible for us to get things like a line of credit from a bank so that we might be able to give some relief to the past due debts and give ourselves a little bit of space to address these situations. Because even when you bring down expenses rapidly, if you already have a huge deficit situation, that's not enough all by itself. And then, of course, the CPB funds are not going to be released, so we are not going to experience that relief of more than $1 million, which I believe, you know, other stations like KPFT were counting on to address some of their infrastructure needs. So I'm saying that as I, you know, I can look ahead and I see us entering the May fund drive, and one has to take into account that when one says, oh, we've raised $600,000, that that's gross and not net, that our fulfillment isn't 100%, so you can already perceive that there may be, you know, easily $100,000 that doesn't get collected in a situation like that. And by the time you pay all of the bills, we end up almost back at square one by the time we're out at the end of one of these fund drives where we don't have enough operating capital to get to the next fund drive. And that's why I'm bringing up the possibilities that we may have to take more dramatic action in order to preserve the signal and not lose the signal. Because one has to think organizationally, what is the mission? And New York is the largest market in the entire country. I personally think it's criminal to allow ourselves to simply lose a signal or to downgrade it to such an extent that it doesn't reach anything anymore when we currently reach a tri-state area. And for all of us that believe what we do here is important and that the information that goes out on the air is important, that reaching a community of that magnitude is, you know, critical to our mission. And I'm seeing that we don't have the cash flow to continue unless we take some other drastic business decisions. And, you know, besides LMAs, which take a lot of approval, besides signal swaps, which would permanently downgrade our reach to the audience, besides lines of credit, which we can't get because of the debt burden, mostly from various, you know, certain vendors, and absent an influx of major donors really underwriting some of these major bills for a period of time, then you're left with how do we reduce operating expenses quickly, sufficiently not to lose an asset, and then employing these other measures to actually increase audience and rebuild the station. And as an organization, I feel we're in that critical place. Lots of arts organizations have found themselves in this position since the real estate crash of 2008. You can read article after article about the number of other nonprofit arts-related organizations that have essentially either had to reorganize or have gone under because of a reduction in support from the public. So part of what we're experiencing is the larger economic impact on our donor base. So some of it's internal, some of it's external, but the tsunami effect of that is we are in a critical cash flow crisis still at New York, which has not turned around. And I don't feel the station, part of the problem is we don't have the breath, we don't have the air, we don't have the room to make the changes that we need. I think we can rebuild the listening audience base in New York. I really do. But you have to have a little bit of space to do that when you're not in fund drive constantly. And what's happened is the station is in critical fundraising mode all the time, further driving down the listening base so that you don't have an opportunity to rebuild your base. And if we stay in that death spiral, we won't be able to turn the situation around. And I think it would be much preferable to take drastic action that keeps the station on the air but maybe doesn't burden the listeners with constant fund drive long enough to get enough listeners back that we could go back to normal operations there.
Okay,
Summer, I must apologize, Manjé. Just quickly, but then we have to move on. Yes, go ahead.
Considering our BAI situation, at the same time that BAI is saying that it's complying with many of the CPB, is it possible to isolate BAI from other stations that are not in compliance, considering it's, and the CPB knows that and they're willing to do something with us, to isolate BAI from that not getting the funding, not getting the money that BAI was supposed to do to get this money so it gets itself bring itself to some level of, you know, stability and then move on. Because, you know, when you say that CPD is willing to do this one for us, but is it possible to appeal to them that because they have been in compliance, if this is what I'm being told, I'm not sure if it is, because always we hear something from the station, we hear something from ED about the real situation. So is it possible to isolate, to find that, you know, move BAI so BAI gets all of the PCBB funding that is being lagging? Thanks.
Janet Kay,
do you want me to answer that or not, Heather?
And then Kim.
Yes, Kim. Go ahead. Summer, are you responding to that?
Yeah, just to, Manisha, to answer your question, thus far in my 2 years almost of interacting with CPB, there has not been any inclination to separate out the compliance of the five stations, even though each one, you know, is individually licensed and the grant goes, you know, for the individual station. CPB has been treating this as a network-wide issue in terms of compliance at all of our units. It is conceivable. I would be happy to speak with them about that. But so far, there has never been any inclination to separate out their compliance station by station. And certainly, the audit is a network-wide issue because we are one corporation with one tax ID number. So if we are not compliant financially, none of the stations will get their CPB funding, even if we're able to separate out the Communications Act compliance. And, yes, we are still having difficulties at both New York and Washington, D.C. with Communications Act compliance. This same issue has come up in regard to the health care benefits because four units are tied together with health care benefits, but two of them routinely don't fund them. And, of course, the idea that you know, units that do fund their health insurance would lose their coverage because of that is alarming to those units. The problem is if we start separating out things like that, we achieve economies of scale as a company, as an employer, by having them bundled on one account, that our rates will be higher if we do them unit by unit. So there are some real benefits to being one organization that are lost when everything goes individually. But I don't think CPB will separate out the stations, to be perfectly honest, in terms of compliance.
Thanks for joining.
Thank you. Janet Kay.
We're going to have to move on. I'm going to take Kim.
Janet Kay, I had asked first. Please. I move that we extend time of this meeting to by 20 minutes.
By 20 minutes. Is there a second? No second?
I second
it. I'll second it. For what purpose?
Okay, so what, good question. For what purpose?
Because there are two items left on the agenda, each slated for 10 minutes.
Exactly, that's exactly right. Are there any objections? All right, thank you. Summer, are you going to respond? Would you respond to, or did you respond to the question? I don't think so.
No, I did respond to that question. Go ahead.
All right, thank you. All right, Kim, go ahead. Kim?
Yeah, I just want to concur, I mean, on the record that I've advocated for I don't want to use the word, being careful with our expenses. Our expenses have grown since 2008, the, you know, historical Great Recession, while our revenues have decreased. And I think that's whether intentional or, you know, delusional or denial, I don't want to say that, but so I think to just give up on, as Summer said, the biggest market in the country, because we don't want to watch our businesses is short-sighted at best. So that's it. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Kim. So it was a good discussion. I want to thank Summer and others for their questions and comments. I would like to move on to the next item on the agenda, which is about candidate statements for nominees for contested national committee positions
And I would appreciate it if someone would please explain why it's important that we do this, why the candidates have an opportunity to talk about their qualifications for these positions. Who would like to do that?
Janet Kay, I can.
Janet Kay, please go ahead.
Yes, so the nominations, either by others or self-nominations for committee seats, happened on paper during the in-person meeting initially, and then also online. And there are some contested seats. And in order for the PNB directors to be informed about who to vote for, the candidate should be able to give a statement as to why they're eligible or why they should be elected, rather than just by name or popularity or whatever. So this needs to happen, and only two of the candidates for seats, for contested seats are present during this meeting. If the others were present, they should be able to also make statements. It's also good for the public to know who the directors are on the different committees.
Richard, in the chat.
Yes, Richard, go ahead.
I want to touch a little bit more on the last thing that you said there about the public, because these comments ought to be on the public meeting, and they ought to be streamed so that the people that are listening in the various cities around the country can have some idea of what kind of thoughts and qualifications that these different people have, and be able to follow them and see if they actually do what they say they're going to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. So we have two candidates here on the call today. So the question is, would the both of you like to make a statement regarding your candidacy for the National Finance Committee? Yes, would you like to go ahead and make your statement?
Yes, and I'd like to, it would be a little bit more than 60 seconds, I think, maybe between 60
go ahead.
Seconds and 90
That's
seconds.
That's fine.
Okay, yes. Okay. So my name is Janet Cobrin, and I'm running against Brian Edwards Tiekert for the KPFA seat on the National Finance Committee. I'm a retired high school math teacher. I worked as an information technology professional for more than 15 years, mostly in the financial industry, and I have served on other nonprofit boards. I bring fresh eyes to this board. Between 2001 and 2006, listener revenue steeply declined at KPFA, but payroll more than doubled, due mostly to increases in paid staff numbers, salary, and benefits. Personnel costs remain high. Brian Edwards Tiekert is a paid staff member of KPFA's local station board and was LSB treasurer in 2008 and 2009. To cover payroll in 2009 and 2010, my opponent supported depleting KPFA's $1 million reserves, resulting in two consecutive $500,000 budget deficits. Fund drives are not doing well, and other revenue is shaky. It may come to a point where, sadly, there could be a repeat of the 2010 cuts that may include my opponent. He is a very skilled and talented programmer, but his sitting on the Finance Committee would clearly result in a potential conflict of interest. I urge directors to vote for me. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Janet. Kim Kaufman, you're another candidate. Would you like to make a statement?
Okay. I'm just I didn't prepare as well as Janet, but basically I'm Kim Kaufman. I'm running against Lydia Brazon for KPFK national to be on the National Finance Committee, the director on the committee. And I've been 2 years as treasurer of KPFK. I've been 3 years as the chair of the Finance Committee. I wrote reports to the LSB regularly to keep them informed, especially about the rising deficits, while coincidentally Bernard Duncan was general manager. I was there for 2 years on the National Finance Committee, and I also was 2 years on the FRAT Committee, which was Financial Recovery Audit Task Force, which was an ad hoc task force for volunteers from treasurers or directors who wanted to work on the repeated deficiencies of the auditor reports. So I'm very familiar with the processes of our financial reportings and lack thereof. I was instrumental in seeing that KPFK had repeated off-the-air experiences from the time I got on the board and even before that, and I started asking questions, and I was fairly instrumental in making sure that we got a new transmitter and a backup generator, so we don't go off the air anymore. My opponent, Lydia, has never been to a Finance Committee meeting in as long as she and I have been on the board, and has approved voted to approve every bad budget that has come before the LSB, unfortunately. So I think I'm much more qualified to represent KPFK as a director on the National Finance Committee right now. I've overseen 4 different budgets, let me add that. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kim.
I need to tell the listeners that here in Atlanta we're having storms and thunderstorms, actually, so I apologize if you hear the noise in the background. So the next item on the agenda is to reconsider the motion regarding conflict of interest of paid staff in the Finance Committee, the National Finance Committee. We've just had a bit of a discussion about that in the previous statements. Richard Udell had offered a motion in the past. Richard, would you like to speak to that motion? Would you like to speak to talk also about what happened in the past with this motion on the Pacific International Board meeting?
Well, I'm not absolutely sure what happened. I was trying to review the records, and I haven't seen any minutes for it. But I think that when I put it forward to have it added to the agenda, it was voted down. But I would still want it to be considered. And do you have the wording there? I don't have access to the internet right this minute. Do you have the wording of the motion that I made that I tried to get on the agenda?
I don't have it in front of me right now, but why don't you speak to it for a moment? I'll take a look for it.
Well, it's essentially that no person should be given a position or allowed a position on the National Finance Committee who is a paid staff member, whether locally or nationally. To me, it's kind of a no-brainer, but I think some people might not see it as I see it, and I think I heard one of the other candidates talking about it a while ago. It's a very definite conflict of interest because so much of the budgets revolve around paid staff. And to have a paid staff person, in a responsible position to come forward with a budget is an obvious conflict of interest because they're not going to cut their own throats. You know, if unfortunately, in New York, we got to the point where we had to reduce staff, and we've had to make a lot of adjustments, and it still has some adjustments to make. But the bottom line on this is, yes, we have some great programs, but if we don't pay our bills, it's pretty moot, you know, because we can't stay on the air and not pay our bills. And when it comes to having to cut sometimes or move things around, if a person is invested in maintaining a program, then they can't have a clear, unbiased approach to putting together a budget. And all this conversation about political factions and this and that, if our stations would live within their budgets and they would come forward with budgets that were reasonable and something that they could live within, then we wouldn't have a lot of these problems that we're having now, because we would be able to pay our bills and keep moving forward. And sure, we would discuss and argue about things, but the main thing is we have to get our budgets in line. And to have a person on that committee that's invested in some particular programming or Friends programming or something like that is just unacceptable in my mind.
So here's the motion. I did, yes. Uzel moves that due to potential conflict of interest of an interested director, that no paid staff representative shall be a member of the National Finance Committee. Is that correct, Richard? That's what I have.
I think so. Yeah, I think so. And like I said, I think if I remember correctly, and like I said, I don't remember because I haven't seen any record of the meeting, but if that hasn't been before the board, I intend to continue it because it's too important not to just let it go asunder.
All right. So thank you. Is there anything else you'd like to do about this today? Is this something that the group? Is there any opposition? Let me ask with those on the call to this motion. We could have a roll call vote if you'd like, Richard, if those on the call.
No, I don't think we need to. I don't think we need to do that. I think it's just, when we get back, hopefully we can get some things on the agenda that really make sense and need to be talked about. And we'll wait until later. If anybody's listening that concurs or disagrees, feedback is always good. If you just send it in or call it in or something. Thank you.
All right, so thank you. We're now going to move to the closed session meeting, and I want people to know that the agenda on the closed session meeting is concerning correcting the closed session minutes of the in-person meeting, actually on February the 7th to the 10th, 2014 in Washington, D.C., and these minutes will pass on April the 17th board meeting, but there was no opportunity for corrections to be made to the minutes, so we want to have a discussion about that. The other item on the agenda is concerning the invalid report out from the April 17th meeting and to explore avenues for corrective action along that line as well. So if we could please move to the closed session meeting. Thank you, everyone. The meeting is adjourned.